KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Grameen Bank founder Muhammad Yunus won a Nobel Prize in 2006 for his efforts to alleviate poverty. In his new book, A World of Three Zeros, Yunus shares his roadmap for addressing global inequality, unemployment, and climate change. Coming up, the microfinance pioneer will join us in the studio to talk about his new book and to take your calls and emails. And that's next, after the news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. The man known for inventing microfinance, Muhammad Yunus, thinks that capitalism is growing too greed-oriented. He won a Nobel Peace Prize back in 2006 for his work lending money at low interest rates to budding entrepreneurs around the world. And he has a new book. It's called A World of Three Zeros, The New Economics of Zero Poverty, Zero Unemployment, and Zero Net Carbon Emissions. In it, he argues that environmental destruction, unemployment, and devastating inequality demonstrate that capitalism is broken. And he joins us this hour in studio to discuss the book and lay out his vision for how to fix capitalism and attain economic prosperity for all of us. Welcome, Muhammad Yunus.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Pleased to have you with us. I guess the place to begin here is to talk about what this new economic system is that you're putting a framework forward with. You say early on that capitalism isn't working and you want to unleash altruism instead.
Yes. The first thing I should mention that about the capitalist system, one thing that it is leading to is an enormous concentration of wealth. And every day, wealth is getting more and more concentrated in fewer hands. That's a kind of a dangerous path that is coming to right now.
There's about eight people own the wealth as much as 50% of the
bottom
population.
50%. Yeah. So eight people versus 4 billion people.
Yeah.
Whatever is owned by 4 billion people is owned by 8 people today, and tomorrow it will be less.
But you don't want to redistribute income. You're talking about something entirely different than that, to do something about the concentration of wealth.
Yeah. Yes. I was saying that this was going on as a part of the capitalist system. Capitalist system is built that way. It's a machine which kind of sucks up wealth and passes on to the top. But for many, many years, it was a slow motion. You don't notice it, and it didn't create a big trouble for that. And now we came to a stage all the wealth is concentrated in one corner of the whole of society, a few people. Today, as you said, eight people. It will be one person soon owning more than half the wealth of the world population. And then one person will be owning more than 50% of the people's wealth and so on. So this is a path where people are continuously in a battle to keep it, and there's a source force which is pushing it to the top. So I think huge mushroom of wealth is on the top of us, and that's where only a handful of people is owning that. And there's a stem hanging from that mushroom is what owned by the 99.9% of the people of the world. And that stem is getting slimmer and slimmer every day, and that mushroom is getting bigger and bigger every day. So it's an explosive situation.
And it's one that you feel can be repaired, reformed, maybe even revolutionized, although I hesitate to use that word. It's such a loaded word, because the emphasis that you present in your book, and it's learned from your old experiences with the Grameen Bank, is
exactly
one of building social businesses.
Yeah. Exactly. That's what I'm saying. I said we have to address this issue. That's my first point. How do you address it? There are standard solutions given by the economists that tax heavily to the rich and distribute to the poor and so on. I said, it's not the concentration of wealth alone, it's also concentration of power. The more wealth you have, more power you have. So there's no way you can take this wealth out of them by law and something like that. That law will never come into effect. So is there anything else? And I say my experience has shown that there are some ways we can do that, and that I lead to the basic flaw in the capitalist system which led to this. And if we fix that flaw, and all this problem can be addressed according to that. And this is fixing up the floor doesn't need some government, parliament decision or a congressional decision. Something like you and me can do that.
You say it doesn't need necessarily not only government, it doesn't need organized charities.
Absolutely. It's something that you and me rediscovering ourselves, who we are. I said the basic flaw in economics is that it's assumed human being as basically driven by self-interest. That's what the human being is, and they put this human being into action, and that self-interest grows, and the more you express your self-interest, better is the economy, and all the things are solved by market, and that has an invisible
and
hand.
Cut taxes and you increase jobs.
Increase jobs and all kinds. Yeah. This is the theory of a capitalist system. I said the basic flaw is in what you imagine that person is supposed to be, a human being supposed to be, the self-driven, selfish person. I said human being is not about selfishness, all about selfishness.
But you have a lot of confidence in human beings.
So we have a lot of confidence in human beings. It's selfish and selfless at the same time. If you open that selfless part of human being just to let it play in the economic world, the whole thing will come to a balance. That's what I'm saying. And it depends on us, you, me, and everybody else. Do we discover the selfless part that we, in economics, in a business, in the self, in the capitalist system, is always said business is business, meaning that never get into involved with other issues. You just focus on money making, maximize profit. That's your goal. That's your job. And you are bound to follow that path. And then everything will be solved. Everything is not solved. More and more complication coming. So I said, why don't we unleash this part and reinterpret human being as a combination of both selfishness and selflessness. That's the part that I'm saying. Then we create two kinds of business. A business based on selfishness, another business based on selflessness. And that's what I'm calling social business, which I did without knowing anything about it. I did it because out of necessity, I create business to solve problem without having any intention of making any profit out of that business. So this is all designed to solve a problem.
Well, in fact, you created a new paradigm back in 1983, with the Grameen Bank, because just for people who may not know about it, the bank served rural people, largely poor people, women to a great extent, disproportionately poor women. And they were credit worthy, so there was and it was all collateral free. So it was the idea. I mean, this is elemental, it seems to me, to your philosophy and your new book and generally, that people will respond, yes, selfishly, but they'll also respond to egalitarian ideals or to human nature being entrepreneurial.
Exactly. That's what I'm emphasizing. One is the selflessness part of it and the entrepreneurial capacity of the human being. I think capitalist system, although kind of glorify entrepreneurship, but created a system where you have to work for somebody. I said, as if the human destiny lies in working for somebody for the rest of his life. I said, that's a wrong interpretation of the human being. Human being is basically an entrepreneur. He and she enjoys being an entrepreneur. And that's what our history is when we were back in the prehistoric days. And that's what we were doing. When we were in the caves, we are not sending job applications from cave number 5 to cave number 10. Give me a job. Do you have a job for me? We didn't do that. We are go-getters. That's a level that I would like to put on the human being.
Well, you've got a message even for millennials. Don't seek jobs.
Absolutely. We say don't seek job. Be entrepreneur. Be yourself. You have enormous creative power in you, unlimited creative power in you. A job will be curtailing that entrepreneur, creative power that you have. It will trim you down to a little person. You are a giant of a person, and you become a tiny little person because you accepted a job. Job needs only a small part of you, and they will put you in a slot, and you grow inside that slot. You cannot get out of it. I said that an entrepreneur is sky's the limit. You can do anything you want. So why didn't you choose the path? And you are a very powerful person, with a young person, with all the creativity and the technology in your hand. Today's technology is like Aladdin's lamp. You can do anything with your entrepreneurial power to make things happen. So why didn't you use this entrepreneurial ability and the Aladdin's lamp you have to change the world, solve everything?
Muhammad Yunus' philosophy you're hearing here. We're talking with the microfinance pioneer. His new book is called The World of Three Zeros. It's a belief that, yes, we're selfish by nature and self-interested, but also selfless and born to be entrepreneurs and born to be problem solvers. By the way, we will soon be updating you, KQED News Update, on the Napa-Sonoma fires. In fact, we'll do that at 10:30. But in the meantime, we're going to get you involved in this conversation with our guest, who is a Nobel Prize recipient and who has a new book out called The Three Zeros, actually A World of the Three Zeros, the new economics of zero poverty, zero unemployment, and zero net carbon emissions. Let me ask you about something. I've always been an admirer of yours, but let me ask you about something that is sensitive, that concerns you personally. There's been notice taken in a very conservative journal called The Daily Caller, but also a Danish documentary that was made about let me just tell you what the charges are. I'm sure you've heard about this, about you're essentially diverting millions of dollars from the Grameen Bank to different entities that were yours. And these even go into sort of casting aspersions and strong indictments, verbal indictments, and other rather than the other kind, against Hillary Clinton, who supposedly bullied the head of Bangladesh into letting things go with respect to corruption and financial mismanagement that was charged against you in the Grameen Bank. In other words, the charges were supposed to go forward, and Hillary Clinton threatened a rather, so the story goes, a rather large loan from the World Bank would not go to Bangladesh, your country.
Yes, those allegations were made, and they are all false allegations, and we have responded to that elaborately. First of all, about the Norwegian television, that what they said, that I have transferred money from Grameen entity to another entity. And that another entity is also a Grameen entity, which is also a social business, meaning that nobody takes any profit out of it. This is according to the understanding with the Norwegian government. Norwegian government came out with a statement, nothing wrong has been done, so that settles the whole thing. And they say it's owned by me. That's absolutely false. I don't own anything in the whole world.
It's a state bank, actually, or was a state bank.
No,
under state statute.
It's not a state bank.
No, I mean, people were saying it was an NGO. It was not an NGO.
It's not an NGO. It's a, first of all, Grameen Bank is owned by the borrowers themselves. So it's a bank which is owned by the borrowers. They sit in the board. They make the decisions. And the entity that we made is also a Grameen entity, which has nothing to do with me as ownership. I don't own any share in any company anywhere in the world. So that's the end of the matter. I said, you can come up with finding one company that I own a single share in it, then I'll dismiss the whole thing that I'm saying, that I'm a liar.
Did Secretary Clinton intervene on your behalf?
Secretary Clinton got worried about what's happening in Bangladesh, because suddenly government of Bangladesh fired me from the bank that I created, Grameen Bank, saying that you are overaged because you went beyond the government limit of 60 years age limit. Every government servant has to retire at the age of 60. So the point that I tried to make, that Grameen Bank is not a government bank. The government rule doesn't apply. They make their own rules in the, within the board. They said that we have no government rules applied here.
Was the government going forward, though, under the assumption that was different than that?
Because they went ahead. They went ahead. They dismissed me. I'm no longer with Grameen Bank. So that's where Hillary Clinton was trying to intervene, that please look at the matter seriously, because we all admire him. He created this bank. So that's the intervention that all people are talking about. And about the World Bank money, World Bank stopped that money for corruption charges, not on what Hillary Clinton made a phone call and then suddenly World Bank has stopped the loans and so on. World Bank has said, you have already started corruption. We have evidence of corruption. If you do not fix it, we have to stop this money. So lots of conversation going back and forth, team visiting Bangladesh from the World Bank, and the government at the beginning saying, yes, we'll take care of this. People who are corrupt, we'll dismiss them, we'll remove them, etc., etc. But at one point, government said, no, we're not going to do anything. Then the World Bank said, if you don't take action, we have to stop that. So it's not a sudden decision. It's a long-drawn process where the decision is made.
We're talking, if you've just joined us, with microfinance pioneer and Nobel Prize recipient Muhammad Yunus. His new book is called A World of Three Zeros. Let me actually go to Bangladesh with you in terms of all these Rohingya Muslims who have nowhere to go really now. I mean, it's not sustainable. And you've come out and you've said Aung San Suu Kyi, who is presently head of that government in Myanmar and Burma, you said she degraded the Nobel and it's become a symbol of violence and atrocity. What perhaps you can help us understand. There are many people, myself included, who admired her, who don't understand. I mean, she was such a strong representative of human rights and democracy, and now, I mean, you've condemned her for violence and for being essentially a catalyst to even greater violence. Why?
I feel extremely sorry that I had to do that, condemn her for that. We are very good friends, and you are not alone admiring her. Whole world admired her. Showered in all the respect for her, that she has done such a great thing. stood up for human rights, stood up for democracy in Burma, gone through prison sentences, house imprisonment, and all kinds of things, and tolerated all this and stood there. But once she wins the election and become head of the government, and now she exposed a completely different picture of her when it comes to the Rohingya Muslims in Myanmar. She started forcing all these people, burned their houses. Her army has killed people, slaughtered them, and they're running for their life. And thousands of them every day crossing borders in Bangladesh to find shelter. And most of them are women and children. The dead bodies of children and women and men are floating on the river between Bangladesh and Myanmar. So she says, well, no, we don't know where they are going. I said, the whole world knows. People are saying that this is it. United Nations has already made a statement, very clear statement at that point. This is a textbook case of ethnic cleansing. There are only 1 million people of Rohingyas in Burma, and now 500,000 already inside Bangladesh, they came. And by the end of the year, as the flow goes on, this estimate 1 million will be crossed by the end of the million. So basically, they want to make sure every single Rohingya crossing over.
Did you say she went from being selfless to being, in some ways, much more selfish in terms of what
she... She became a completely different person. She she kind of turned around what she was. The whole, instead of establishing human rights, she's destroying human rights. Instead of democracy, these are the people who had citizenship right from the beginning of the country as it was born. They were part of Burma. They were born in Burma. For generations, they live in Burma. Naturally, they became citizens, and they had the citizenship. They had political parties. They joined politics. They were members of the parliament. They were ministers in the cabinet. In 1982, suddenly military government says that you are not Burmese citizens, so we scrap your citizenship. And that's where the trouble began. Now they want to push them. Not only they are not citizens, they are pushing them out by enormous atrocities and physical attack on them by the Burmese military and so on. So this is the picture. And Aung San Suu Kyi, instead of protesting it, she's supporting it and making it happen with ease with the military.
The reason I asked you that question about selfish versus selflessness, though, is this ties in with your whole theory about human nature, that there's both operating, you know. But the extremes are there, too, and the extremes seems they're always going
to
be there.
She moved to the extreme of the other part.
Yeah.
So this is, and instead of being honored now, she is being condemned. Oxford University has removed her picture in the university because they gave her a tremendous amount of admiration and respect to hang her portrait in the university. They took it off. So every single part, government has, many government, I shouldn't say every single, many governments have condemned her. Governments like France and others said she is undertaking a genocide in the country. So it's not my word, it's the leaders of the country, presidents and prime ministers of countries saying that she's conducting a genocide inside the country.
I'm sure we'll hear from more listeners about this because it certainly is disturbing, particularly to many of us like you and me, who at one time had a good deal of respect for her and the Nobel Prize representing much of the work that she did, legitimately did.
Yeah.
I want to get back, though, to your book, if I may, and then we'll bring our listeners into this and they can talk about whatever we've touched on here. But to institute this kind of egalitarian system, which would indeed take into account, you know, environmental catastrophes that are in the making here with climate change that are also driving people, refugees and so forth. We just had Weiwei on, you know, and has done this amazing film about the refugee problem, which continues to just exponentially move forward, particularly because of climate change. We need, don't we, to go ahead with this vision that you put forward in your book, a new and different infrastructure. We need, you know, legal and financial systems that are different. In other words, we need to kind of change the whole systems.
So we have to reinvent the whole system because you mentioned the financial system. Let me touch on the financial system first.
Yeah, you're the economist.
My life began, my life began with economics, and my life began with microcredit. And the people who are left behind by the entire banking and financial system. So I started lending them. They said it's impossible. They are not creditworthy. I said, this is not a question of whether people are creditworthy or not. The whole question is whether the banking system is people-worthy or not. So why don't you rediscover yourself rather than keep on blaming those people? So we started it and it worked. Now we work all over Bangladesh. We have over 9 million people within Grameen Bank alone. There are many other programs. And now it has come around all over the world. including United States. United States has a program supported by us called Grameen America, which has a branch right here in San Jose. There are 10 branches all over the United States. There are 7 branches in New York City.
You've also done, let me just say, some really, and you talk about it in the book, some pretty extraordinary things in Paris and in France,
exactly.
And some with multinationals. Even.
Absolutely, lots
But
of
also
them.
The story that I really absorbed on a very deep level was what's going on in Uganda.
Yeah. All the entrepreneurship that you see in Uganda.
But changing the financial system even goes beyond all of that.
Beyond it. Because I said financial system is something they're dealing with what is economic oxygen to people. If you take away that oxygen from people, they become hard. They cannot breathe properly. They can become weak. They can become dead, economically dead. That's what is happening to the poor people. They don't have that economic oxygen into them. So I said, the moment you put the back into the oxygen part, the people start working. They become alive. They're enterprising. They're doing.
Can I use your metaphor? You say poor people are like bonsai.
The bonsai. I say the bonsai because I said you take the seed of a tall tree or the tallest tree in the forest, put it in a flower pot, let it grow. It grows only 2 feet or 3 feet high and looks exactly like the tree in the forest, a replica, but it doesn't grow further. I said, what's wrong with it? Nothing wrong with the seed. Simply the seed was not allowed the base on which to grow, only flower pot. I said, poor people are bonsai people. There is nothing wrong with the seed. They are as good human being as anybody else. Simply society never gave them the base so that they could be as tall as everybody else, as creative as everybody else. And then we turn around and blame them for that. I said, that's a wrong blaming. Blame yourself because we created that system. So we need to redesign that system, financial system, piece by piece. The people who are left out from the system, that's why you have the payday lenders. Why do we have to have payday lenders? Why can't the banking system take care of it? Why do we have pawn shops? Why don't the financial system take care of it? So you push people into a different kind of life because financial system is not interested in them.
But there's also a belief underlying this that people will do good, that there's social entrepreneurship and social businesses will be for the good and the benefit of people in general. And then we're up against, I mean, because you talk a lot about climate change and you talk about how devastating it's almost inevitably
going
to be.
And you mentioned about the refugees. I was just going to mention in Bangladesh, we will be the climate refugees very soon.
You'll be affected more than most places on the globe.
But we're in the front line.
Just thinking about the fact, though, that you set up the Paris Accords and all the countries come aboard and then suddenly you have a leader in the United States who says, we don't want to be part of this.
Absolutely.
Accord. I mean, that's. Let me just leave that thought here for a moment, come back.
Yeah.
But I also want to give an opportunity to our listeners to join this conversation. We're talking to Muhammad Yunus, who won the Nobel Prize back in 2006 and is the founder of the Grameen Bank. He has a new book called A World of Three Zeros, The New Economics of Zero Poverty, Zero Unemployment, and Zero Net Carbon Emissions, again, based on the idea of social businesses and social entrepreneurship. Let's hear from you on this. We want your thoughts, we want your questions and comments, and you can join us at our toll-free number right now. Number to call is 866-733-6786. We welcome your involvement in this conversation. Again, join us at 866-733-6786 or email us, forum@kqed.org, or join us by going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. You can also tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum, or go to our Facebook page. And again, KQED News will be bringing us an update on the Napa and Sonoma fires right after the break. Stay tuned for that. But when we return, we'll talk more with our guest, Muhammad Yunus, and we'll hear from you, our listeners. You're listening to Forum on KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. I'm Michael Krasny. We are talking this hour with microfinance pioneer Muhammad Yunus. He's here with us in studio. He has a new book called A World of Three Zeros. And before we went to the break, we were talking with Muhammad Yunus about the Paris Accords and the fact that the United States has essentially at this point decided under President Trump not to be part of them in terms of climate change. In fact, the United States has traditionally seen itself as a leader in global aid and development. You see this changing under the current administration?
We see signs, which not good signs, particularly on the climate issue. This was a very disappointing, very painful thing because the whole world kind of took a long time to mobilize this idea, to bring all the governments together and debate after debate. And finally, in Paris, was signed onto an agreement that this is what we're going to do. We are going to protect the planet from the climate change. So we celebrated that finally it happened. Now we move into direction so that carbon emission comes to zero, net carbon emission comes to zero. And suddenly bad news comes that USA wants to withdraw. U.S. being such a big country, such a powerful country, that's a bad omen for the whole thing. The rest of the world is still sticking to that agreement, and very happy signs that mayors of various cities in USA and governors made their statement. They still stick to that commitment. We will continue to do what the federal government does. Is that beyond that, we will do everything that we can do in our power. So we see still a tremendous amount of support coming from the USA. But the
especially here in California.
Especially for right here in California. So we still want to, rest of the world will go ahead with the support of the people within the United States, and we make it happen. Otherwise, we don't have a planet left. Very soon it will be coming to a, we will come to a point of no return. Even if you try to do something, you cannot do it because you missed the whole bus. So before it happens, we want to make sure we get things done so that it's a safe planet, and it becomes safer and safer every year rather than more and more dangerous every year. So you have to reverse that process.
A lot of people who want to speak to you. Let me get as many callers as I can, and let's begin with a caller by the name of Anthony who's joining us from Oakland. Anthony, you're on the air.
Hey, thank you, Michael, for taking my call, and Mr. Muhammad, thank you for giving us your time today. Yeah, so I love your stance on getting to a point of 3-0s. You know, the gentleman that I'm familiar with, and hopefully you are, is Jacques Fresco in the Venus Project, and creating a sustainable world where we can live where there is no means of money or things like that. We have the technology where we can live on this planet where we don't need a couple hundred people having all of the money in the world. I mean, don't you agree that it's asinine that the demand of 600 people does not equal 7 billion people that need to live on this planet? And likewise, the corporations that are milking this planet because they want to make more money every year and realizing that we're living on a finite resource planet, we need to make this change. I mean, if I'm 26 years old and can see this, and if you're a person who's one of the top 100 global thinkers and is not telling these global leaders you need to change how you act on this planet, otherwise you will destroy not only the 7 other billion people, but yourselves. Why are we not talking about this?
Yeah, but I don't think, Muhammad Yunus, you're not saying do away with capital. that's not in your plan.
We can do it.
Nor in your vision. Well, you may think that, and indeed, Anthony, you should put that idea forward. But I'm also mindful of, and I alluded to this before, that you've worked with some of the multinationals here.
Yes, you do.
Can you talk about that?
Yes, you have lots of now big companies to our surprise. We thought they will hate us because we are talking about taking profit out of the picture, personal profit out of the picture. We were surprised when they came to us to discuss social business. They are interested in social business. At first, we are suspicious of them. Maybe they want to sniff something of money inside. But the more closely we came to them, we see how dedicated, committed they are to make things happen in a different way. Danone came from France. They created a special social business company in Bangladesh to address the problem of malnutrition among the children of Bangladesh by designing a special kind of yogurt, all the macronutrients into it, a fortified yogurt, make it very cheap so that all the poor families can afford it. It's a separate company from which they will never take any profit out. As a social business, it's a non-dividend company, and it will continue to work for the people and make it cheaper and cheaper.
And Intel is seeking solutions.
And Intel, we have a joint venture with Intel about one of the two things we have done so far with Intel. One of the things is very fascinating is about the women, pregnant women, because one of the problems in Bangladesh is a death of pregnant mothers at the time of childbirth, which is way above from the normal what is expected from a good quality healthcare system.
Mortality rate is very high.
Mortality rate both for the mother and the child. So they have developed a kind of bangle, beautiful ornament, but very powerful technological ornament, which guides you during your pregnancy. As soon as the pregnancy begins, you can wear it. And it gives you every week some information about your body and so on, what you should do. It will say, what are the things that if you feel this kind of thing, this is normal, nothing to be worried
just
about.
Just informing you throughout the whole pregnancy.
If you have problems like this, then please press the button so that some doctor can get in touch with
Great.
You. That's all. So the idea is to identify the risky pregnancies. So once you can identify the risky pregnancies, then you can pay attention to them so that they don't die. Rest of the people are okay. This is a normal thing, delivery of the child. But since we don't know the risky pregnancies, they are the people who die in the childbirth because there's no precaution is taken, no arrangement is made.
But they're not doing this solely for selfless reasons. They're also making profit off it, yes?
Not on this one, because this is a social business. This is done as a social business. It has to cover the cost. At the same time, nobody takes any profit out of it, personal profit out of it. Profit is plowed back into the system.
Right back into the system, yeah. Let me go to more of our callers. Let me bring in a caller from Hayward. Michael, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. Thank you so much for the call. And Mr. Muhammad Yunus, I kind of know about your work from my father-in-law, John C. Wiebe. You might have run into him in either, I don't know, India, Uganda, Africa, someplace. Anyway, I've known about the Grameen Bank structure and the protocols for getting it going, and it seems to me that I'm just trying to look for some traction that I can work with my credit union to follow the same sequence and maybe palletize some of our mortgages that are still underwater because of the bigger banks and get them away from those banks and have a community bank situation, basically buy them up and start working back towards resolving those and making them, you know, get the human nature of trying to provide for everybody, you know, but in a more local place. So if you have any suggestions of how I might want to talk to my credit union, I'd really appreciate it.
Suggestions about establishing his own local community bank or leading in that direction? Some thoughts?
Yeah, or Grameen Bank structure or something like that.
Yes, it's a bank, it's community bank is fine. The question is whether it's, for me at least, is whether it's a social business or a money-making business. I'm not against money-making business. It's fine. You want to make money. But don't go to the path of loan sharking. Because once you do that, you get into the, again, not helping the people rather than exploiting the people. So that part we want to avoid. So it should be your profit should be limited, interest rate should be limited to the extent it doesn't become exploitative. But we would like to see it as a social business. You are doing it to help people rather than make money for anybody.
And go to the borrowers. That was always the
theme
of the Grameen Bank, rather than having the borrowers come to you.
Come to us,
let me thank the caller. And let me actually go to some comments here and questions that are coming in. Carl writes, does Professor Yunus have ideas on how the values he promotes might be adopted in the for-profit corporate world? Well, you've just given somewhat of an outline of that. That's in terms of scale and spreading?
Yeah, I will mention that. It's a very good issue. I invite every single business, big, large, multinational, doesn't matter. I said, you have an opportunity to create a separate social business on the side. It could be a very tiny one, but please start one. So that you have tremendous creative power inside of your business, your experience, your ability to do the management. But design a social business to address a problem in one of the countries that you operate, to address the problem of unemployment or poor health care or environment, whatever you do. It's important because you bring those creative power into it. You'll be surprised what a good thing that company can do once you could remove the whole idea of making money because you are under pressure of the stock market, always looking at what the stock market's saying. So you'll be completely free.
It's a new notion of corporate citizenship, really. I mean, corporate citizenship often means charity or philanthropy.
Absolutely. Yeah. We said you already give money away by the CSR, corporate yes. social responsibility. You have a company foundations. You can use that to create social business and use your own brand name into social business, saying that we are doing it so that I take responsibility of anything going wrong into it. Your company will be proud of what you're doing. So we encourage them. Every single company can do that.
I wonder what you say to a listener, Heather, who writes, the Bay Area has unique challenges caused by high housing costs. What role does secure housing play in realizing human potential here or in the world?
Housing is a big problem everywhere in the world for the poor people, particularly people in urban situation, where people literally have to live in an apartment like a coffin that you can get in, you can get out kind of situation. That's the thing. So with the unlimited human capacity to create, you can come with a program where you can have a decent housing for people. And now we are focusing on plastic, for example, waste plastic, because plastic is going to kill us. Almost 8 million tons of plastic goes into ocean, and you're creating a big ocean of plastic right now, and it's getting bigger
and
bigger.
We're making progress, though.
Yeah.
We are making some progress. I've just read some recent data. Yeah,
yeah, we want to recycle this plastic. Recycle this plastic so that it becomes usable for various reasons. One of the recycled plastic use we are trying to design is to housing purposes. So the housing elements, housing materials and so on can be done and you can have a housing issue settled because it's a very important issue.
Credit, you say in your book, is a human right.
Yes, I do.
And explain that a little, clarify
that. Yeah, because we talk about right to work, right to health, right to education. These are human rights, the whole list of human rights. I said these are all good and we should applaud that, we should stand behind that. But who is going to bring reality to the people that, yes, your right to food means you have food in your table? Is it the government to bring food to you or somebody else to bring food to you? So it's not happening. Just because a right to food is your human right doesn't mean that it automatically translates into food in your table. I'm saying you have to give the power for the people so that he can establish that right and society can establish the right for everybody. I said, if you add one more right into that list, right to credit, if you can put right to credit into that whole list, then start beginning. If you provide that money from the financial system, as I said, finance is a kind of a oxygen for people. So your right to credit is bringing oxygen to you. Once the oxygen is done, then you become active. You start doing things on your own, and the food will be coming. It's income that you generate. Income brings food, and you move on from there. And then right to health care, again, if you have income, right to health care can be established. Right to housing will become easier. All those things will become easier and practical once you add one more right into it, right to credit.
Change the wealth pyramid to a wealth diamond.
Yes, that's a. I said we are talking about the wealth pyramid, but now I'm using a different word. I said the wealth mushroom because it's so much like a mushroom. And I'm saying that we can turn this, if we imagine as a pyramid which goes up and stays in the bottom, in the top only few people, in the bottom lot of people, we can turn it into a diamond, a reverse of it. You have very few people in the bottom, very few people in the top, bulk of the people in the middle. That's the diamond shape. That's what we're arguing for.
Let me go to more of our callers. Aguineta, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to listen to this great conversation. My question and concern is, how would you, sir, propose to navigate the challenge of religion and women in many parts of the world where women are, for religious reasons, not able to participate in this great idea of being entrepreneurs and get the oxygen to them so that they can bring that forth and make this actually work en masse?
Very important question, and Muhammad Yunus.
Thank you very much for raising this question. I'm coming from Bangladesh. It's a Muslim country and working with the women. So I had to face all the attacks religion can produce in a country where religion is very sensitive so far as the women is concerned.
But they're not doing in Bangladesh, for example, what they do in Afghanistan, I mean, trying to keep women from being educated, or are they? To that, to not the degree you see in Afghanistan.
Not as a legal thing, but because in Bangladesh also their traditional way, that you send children, boys into school, you don't send your daughters to school. If you do, the daughters are dropped off earlier than the boys continue.
Are there people throwing things in the eyes of those girls?
No, that's acid throwing and all those. Those things exist. I mean, it's not only Bangladesh, many other countries. So that happens. But what I'm saying, even coming from Bangladesh, we create a bank which is, out of 9 million borrowers we have, 97% are women. So we created that facility despite the fact that there are opposition. We are good with them. We handle them, and they accepted it. It goes on all over the country. So that has been done. And if you come to Bangladesh today, one of the massive change that you'll see in Bangladesh in the last 25 years, the transformation of the women, status of the women in Bangladesh. If you have gone there 25 years back, hardly you'll see any women anywhere. You go to village, nobody will be seen. You go to the cities, it looks like all men city. So now you see women everywhere. Women are working in the garment industry. You see thousands and thousands of working in the street in the city of Dhaka. So the transformation can take place. That's what I'm saying.
You have a woman prime minister.
We have a women prime minister, women speaker in the house, and so on. So we have lots of those things, positive things. I'm not saying we have settled everything, but a significant difference has taken place. And the women own the largest bank in the country, Grameen Bank. They own the bank. They sit in the board. They make the decisions. And their children are all educated, both boys and girls. There's no irrespective of it. So they have equal status so far as the law is concerned.
We'll go to another caller here. This is Hugh. Hugh, join us. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. I'm not sure if your guest will be attending the SOCAP, the Social Capital Markets Conference, happening this week in San Francisco, which deals a lot with expanding his model and other models. One of the other models that shows some promise is B Corps, corporations like Patagonia, Etsy, Warby Parker, others that give some benefit back to the community they're choosing. They're still profitable, obviously, which is a slightly different model. But what your guest thinks about that model?
I like that model very much. I admire them, I applaud them. Some of our familiar companies, they are transforming themselves into B Corp companies. I admire. They have involved in social business, but for technical reasons, they couldn't do it as a social business. They created a B Corp business in the United States, and I'm extremely happy that they moved into that direction in a very significant change for them. So I like that. So we say anybody who's trying to benefit the people, I like that. Simply, in our case, we create a company which is different in the way that we don't want to take any personal benefit out of it. We dedicate everything in problem solving. That's all the difference we are. That doesn't mean that all others are bad. We are the good one. That's not what we say. All are good, and each one has a different way of approaching the subject. We approach it from this side, and we see this as a certain advantage. We want to use that advantage for these people.
Our guest is Mohammed Yunus, and excuse me, his book is A World of Three Zeros. Here's a listener who writes, is there some way we could change the corporate structure to eliminate the mandate to always be profitable for shareholders? It seems like a lot of corporations use this clause to dehumanize their employees, their customers, and the environment. And you do hear this certainly from the big companies all the time. We have our obligation to our shareholders above all. So the listener's question about changing that structure?
Yeah, I support the whole thing because it's an extreme form, what USA law has done, extreme form of capitalism that you have to make profit, where we are saying we have designed not to make profit. See, just the reverse. We create, so what a big relief the moment you are not under that pressure of make profit. So we have to have the legal scope for that so that we create a company that we don't have to make profit the owners of the company, but the profit is made. Profit is plowed back into the company so that it continues to do that. So this is a distinction that we have to make. And I hope all those B Corp and other initiatives to get out of that situation. And may someday USA will be thinking about to remove that clause from the companies. Let companies decide what they want to do with their money.
Terry writes, what about the problems of overpopulation, materialism, and resource extraction threatening ecosystems? Do you support reduction of economic expansion and moving towards simpler lives?
I was emphasizing the other way, probably similar conclusion. The other way, all the wealth is going into few hands. So by your nature, you are in the simple level anyway, because all the wealth is going in another direction. So we want to address that the wealth is equally available to everybody else. And that's what we are saying. If all of us can express ourselves both in a selfish and selfless way, and also we can all focus on entrepreneurship rather than job seeking, that will create a world which will be completely different than what we have done right now. In that case, our selfish part can become as small as we wish, because we don't have to have hundreds of houses for ourselves or all the consumption goods, many items. The world doesn't change or my life doesn't change because of that. I want to do things which is good and enjoy people doing things for themselves and so on. And I emphasize by saying making money is a happiness. Making other people happy is a super happiness. So we'll all enjoy the super happiness part of it.
A lot of people feel super happiness in making money. And maybe,
I know. I'm trying to transform
right.
That.
You're asking for a reversal.
Reversal, because I'm saying that if you have done it, if you've done something which make other people happy, suddenly you feel a new kind of enjoyment, new kind of happiness. Until you have done it, you will know only money making is the happiness because you have not known any other happiness.
There's a lot of data.
So I'm inviting you to.
There's a lot of research that supports what you're saying.
Thank you.
But here's B, who writes, bringing up another question about employment. Robots are coming for our jobs. Nobody misses obsolete hard labor like hand washing laundry. The transition was very painful for millions of displaced workers. Could universal basic income solve this?
I don't see the solution in that way. I see the solution in everybody to become entrepreneur so that I'm not looking for a job to begin with. I said whole issue of unemployment came because we invented a concept of employment. If we never invented the concept of employment, the question of unemployment didn't exist.
But you're assuming that people are by nature entrepreneurial.
That's what I'm saying.
There are a lot of people who prefer getting, let's say, help from the government, prefer being on welfare or whatever you want to call it, and don't like to work.
This is because of the culture that we have created. It's not because it's ingrained with us. If we see my friend is becoming an entrepreneur, my son is becoming an entrepreneur, everybody is becoming. So I will not sit in the middle and say, oh, I'd like to work with somebody else. I will say, hey, what am I doing? At least let me try out. How do you feel about it? Why everybody is rushing to that? For example, when we do microcredit, we ask people, the women particularly, to see if you can start a business with the money that we give. The fact that we provide the money, everybody said, yes, I can start a business. And they do it not only one or two or thousands or hundreds of thousands, in millions and millions of people. So because we created the environment, it's all about environment, what environment you create. You create a financial environment so that you see, why am I sitting here on a welfare check? I can do much better than that rather than get this tiny little welfare check and remain dependent, not do anything. If they have the if I have the opportunity to take money, I will do that and start a business myself. I know a lot of things which I can do, but I can't do because nobody will give me a penny.
Well, here's a caller on point, I think. Philip, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. I taught English as a second language for over 30 years in San Francisco, and one of the textbooks had a chapter about you and the Grameen Bank, and I always enjoyed teaching that chapter.
Thank you.
My question is you've just discussed that, how in this country, when so many people are dependent on handouts from the government, in fact, Representative Barbara Lee said in an article in the Chronicles, is be at the table with the black agenda, demand those resources. It seems that certain segments of our society are totally dependent on government handouts.
All right, we're short on time. Let's get a response from Muhammad Yunus.
Quickly, because they have no other option. They depend on that. If I was working in this country, one of my first, one of the priority social business that I'll do, I'll take 50 unemployed people or 50 people on welfare to see how to create an environment. I take this 50 out of the welfare and make them into entrepreneurs. It can be done. I will start doing that. And if I can demonstrate that we can take people out of welfare by encouraging them to create their own enterprises, you laid down the procedure. So you repeat this and all the people who would like to come out of it.
We have to leave it there. Thank you, Muhammad Yunus.
Thank you. Thank
you
very
much. So good to have you with us. The World of Three Zeros. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.